On Newsnight tonight, Speaker of Parliament criticizes minority leader as he distances himself from Nathaniel Marking's references to the Speaker's past conduct as MP to justify the recent chaos in Parliament.
What the minority leader is doing now is not what I did. He has copiously referred to you people that he took inspiration from my record. Please go and read my record.
Also tonight, the Ghana Armed Forces is revamping recruitment drive with enhanced safety protocols after recent deadly stampede left six dead and dozens injured.
And so what we have done is that we have beefed up, the military police will be there, more personnel have been brought on board and will not allow any. But the applicant must also learn to comport themselves. When we ask them to sit, we expect them to sit.
We hear from the minority, which had earlier pressed government to review the entire recruitment process. Also tonight, government to introduce a National Defence University Bill to streamline and enhance training of security personnel across Ghana.
It's President Mahama's decision that the Ghana Armed Forces and all its allied institutions be upgraded into a university of the National Defence University.
And then later, as Ewoyaa residents push for swift ratification of the lithium lease, we'll hear from a policy analyst and the Chamber of Mines. They are both asking the minority and majority sides in Parliament to desist from politicizing the deal and pass it.
Clearly, the MPP is playing politics with this whole issue. And it's also fair to observe that the NDC in their time also played politics with the issue. The whole discussion seems to be driven by sentiments rather than data and science.
More, as he says, increasingly polarized exchanges between the majority and minority could weaken investor confidence.
Playing endless politics with this lithium deal is sending a bad signal to the international investor communities.
We'll hear from the Chamber of Mines and Business tonight.
Finance Minister Dr. Tuforsen projects about 6.5% inflation rate before the end of this year.
And in sports, Ghana's Black Stars complete final training session ahead of tomorrow's Karen Cup clash against South Korea.
And you want to join us with your thoughts and comments, 055-1111-997. My name is Evans Mensah, and we start tonight from Parliament, where the Speaker, Aban Babing, has tonight been criticising the minority leader as he distances himself from Alexander Nathaniel Marking's references to the Speaker's past conduct as MP to justify the recent chaos in the House. Now, Parliament this year alone has recorded a number of unpleasant incidents, both on the floor and at the committee levels, especially during ministerial vetting of Kwabena Minta-Akando and Samuel Okudzeto-Ablakwa. The most recent case was the vetting of Chief Justice nominee Paul Bafoboni, who was confirmed today and sworn in, where the committee spent close to 3 hours arguing over the propriety of the open remarks of the minority leader. Now listen to Speaker Aban Babing's reaction to the recent incidents at the launch of a scholarship scheme for members of Parliament.
You've been told often, and sometimes I expect some of you who experience it to respond, but you don't. And you know, silence means consent. What the minority leader is doing now is not what I did. He has copiously referred to you people that he took inspiration from my record. Please go and read my record. I never, on the floor, raise my voice. I never, on the floor, try to show grandeur. No, I stated the ecology, the political environment. I tested the pulse of the people, and you play along with that. I didn't do what you are doing. Please, everybody can go and read.
Well, the Speaker was speaking today at the scholarship launch for members of Parliament. My colleague, parliamentary correspondent, will join me pretty shortly with how this matter came about and what really triggered this. Also, the Speaker goes ahead to speak directly to other issues of importance to him, directly dealing with the incident, the minority leader, usually making references to him.
Only one occasion when the Right Honourable Peter Lajeti came and read a statement attacking attacking me personally that I rose up to say my side of the story. And he will not allow me to do so. My very good friend, Papa Nkuma, who was the majority leader then, stood up and said, once he mentioned me specifically, by our standing orders, I have the right of reply. And he shouted at him and prevented him and ordered him to sit down. And that day, I took my books and stormed to my office. My colleagues did not follow me. They continued with the work of Parliament. It was in my office that the then few cameras, led by GTV, questioned why I moved out. And I gave them my side of the story. I said, if this is how the Speaker was going to go about things on the floor of Parliament, I will go after him. That caught the attention of the whole nation. That is the only instance. And later on, I met him and narrated that he accused me without basis. They pleaded on me to rather tone down my response, which was meaningless. It's also captured in the official report. I'm saying this because this has been referred to many times by many people that I behaved the same way when I was minority leader. If I did, we could have turned things around within 2 years, and we almost won the 2004 elections. And these young MPs, a minister for education and his team, joined us in 2005. Please, the opportunity is now. And that is why I'm saying this.
Well, let me bring in my colleague, James Avegi, who was there for us today. And James, this was supposed to be a scholarship launch event. So how did this come into his speech?
Well, Evan, so the speaker, as part of his speech, was drawing on how he himself has improved upon his parliamentary delivery as well as his leadership skills from trainings that he's had from several institutions. Mentioned the fact that in those critical times when a government changed power, especially under John Ejikum Kufo, when he became the minority leader, he immediately had to enroll himself at GIMPA to undertake some leadership courses in order to sharpen his skills. And it was from then that he delved into the conversations about what is happening now and how the minority leader on a number of occasions indicated that the speaker is more or less his father in the house and that he takes a lot of inspirations from the way he led the minority when he was the minority leader back into power in 2008 when things, the party fell apart and even parliament, things looked like they were not, the NDC at the time will not be able to come into power again. It is on that basis and those inferences the minority leader would usually draw in his speeches that he gave that indication or statement distancing himself from some of those positions.
And to put it simply, he doesn't approve of the minority leader's actions in the specific instances that we know has cropped up recently.
Not in any way at all, Evans. You hear him talk about the fact that even in instances where he, as the minority leader, staged a walkout of proceedings, his members stayed to make sure they execute the job of the minority on the floor. And so he does not associate himself with any of those things in any way.
I want to bring in John Darko. He's MP for Swame. He's also the legal counsel for the Minority Caucus in Parliament. Mr. Darko, thanks for the time here on Newsnight. You just listened to the Speaker of Parliament there. The minority leader describes him as his father. His position is that he doesn't endorse the leadership style of the minority leader. And many will see what he said tonight as a rebuke of the way he's approached the leadership of the minority. Give me your quick response to what you've heard the speaker said today.
Well, let me say here now that those of us in the minority support our leader without any shred of or without any wavering at all. The minority leader is in a rather difficult situation a situation which has never happened under the First Republic. And he carries a lot of weight on his shoulder. Look, the minority leader has done a yeoman's job from January to now. And honestly speaking, I respect the Speaker of Parliament very, very well. When he sits as the Speaker, it is completely different. And I enjoy Parliament when the Speaker of Parliament is sitting, Honorable Alban Baden is sitting and presiding. But let me say this. Any time your opponent praises you, it means that you are doing something wrong against your group. And I can tell you, the Honorable Speaker is a member of the NDC. He's happy when the NDC is in the driving seat. He will definitely not be happy when the minority leader, Afeno Markin, is in the driving seat. He will not praise Afeno Markin when Afeno Markin is leading the charge against the NDC. He will never do that. If you look at what happens in the House, the majority side sometimes do worse. But in most cases, if there's going to be any backlash against members of parliament, it comes only against the minority. Why is that the case? Honorable Ayarega during the vetting of the CJ, what did he do? He said that he wasn't going to allow Honorable Afeno Markin to ask certain questions or give a statement, and that he made sure that Afeno Markin doesn't do what he wants to do. Meanwhile, he wasn't the one presiding. The person presiding at the time was the chair of the appointment committee. On what basis was the majority leader claiming that he was going to prevent Afeno Markin from going ahead to do what he was doing? Did the speaker reduce the majority leader to saying that? And so, honestly, much as I respect and love Honorable Alban Baden, I disagree completely with him. I don't think that really MPP has to get an endorsement from an NDC person before MPP knows that you're doing a good job.
So the speaker is being unfair then, and targeting the minority side unfairly, and possibly discriminating against you. Is that your position on the matter?
That is why he's your family. He's leading a child and completely refilling his rich person. What Honorable Alban Baden was a minority leader. Some of us were around, but we followed him. Maybe we don't have all the videos, but we watched some of his actions. We saw him. I don't think that he can say that he was not perfect. Just like a Afeno Markin is not perfect. Nobody is perfect.
I mean, talking about the man to do his job.
Can you hear me, John? He has our total support.
Hello, John.
The minority members, 100%.
Hello, John. Can you hear me?
Afeno Markin, and he's leading us to a family.
John, can you hear me?
Yes.
You talk about your minority leader not being perfect, of course. Talking about imperfections, where would you say it has manifested itself in the last year or so? What would you say has been his flaw that needs to be improved? Because you listen to the speaker, he points to the challenges of the leadership style. You say he's not perfect. If he's not perfect, then there are instances where you yourself are spotted that you believe he can do something about to improve. Which are these?
Well, I'm saying that he's imperfect, just like I am imperfect. Just like you said that you are imperfect. Just like the Speaker of Parliament is imperfect. Just like the President is imperfect. There's no perfect man in this country. It is in that respect that I'm saying that. But in terms of his leadership, in terms of how he led the minority group, minority caucus in Parliament, I always call him 100 over 100. Look, you're never going to get the NDC to praise MPP leader in Parliament. If a Afeno Markin was being praised by the NDC members, I would think that there's something wrong with him. I would think that he's doing something bad. But so long as the NDC is against a Afeno Markin, it means that he's doing something right. And so, yes, we are all imperfect in terms of the leadership state. I haven't seen any problem with that.
So as far as his leadership is concerned, he is imperfect.
He's leading us, he's our sacrament of our days, and he has our support.
I hear you, John.
100%.
I hear you, John.
Without any reverence.
As far as his leadership is concerned, rather, you see him as perfect then, because 100 of 100 is a perfect.
Exactly. Okay. His leadership in Parliament, 100%.
John Darko, there's MP for Swame, is also the Minorities Council, Legal Council, still live here on Newsnight on Joy 99.7 FM. Now, the Ghana Armed Forces is set to resume its recruitment exercise in Accra following a tragic stampede last week that claimed six lives and left several injured. Now, in response, the military has unveiled a robust safety plan, including reinforced security and crowd management protocols to prevent similar incidents. My colleague, Michael Shalley, joins me with details of that statement from the armed forces. Walk us through the new protocols.
Well, Evans, we know that as part of the new measures to ensure a seamless process, unlike what we saw at the AWAC Stadium, where hundreds of thousands of people had gathered waiting for their turn. They tell us that in this statement that the screening will be done at 8 sub-centres within the following 5 stations. And in contrast, Evans, what we know is that all of them, the Greater Accra Region, are going to be at one place, which was the AWAC Sports Stadium. Now it's going to be 5. AWAC Stadium will have 2 centres. Nicholson Park, Bema Camp, 2 centres. The Air Force Base Bema Camp will have one. There's going to be another one at the Training and Doctrine Command at Tradoc Teshi, 2 centers. Then the Eastern Naval Command Tema. They continue and tell us that all qualified applicants in batches of 600 persons will each receive an SMS specifying their reporting dates, batches, and designated centers. They are also encouraged to check on the recruitment portal for updates. Applicants are strongly advised to strictly adhere to these instructions. Any qualified applicant who does not receive a text message by Thursday, 20th November 2025, should call the helpline for assistance. Applicants can also verify from the recruitment portal. Evans, this is exactly the new protocol, stark difference from what it used to be. Everybody's going to be at AWAC Sports Stadium this time around. From Thursday, they're going to be using 5 different areas, which will have more than 10 centers if you put that all together, Evans.
Well, the acting director general of public affairs at the Ghana Armed Forces, Veronica Ahin, says these rules will be strictly enforced.
So, the release, we are going to invite the applicants, giving specific dates and specific venues, and they will be invited in the numbers of not more than 600, in fact, 600. And so, looking at all the venues we have mentioned, they can easily take that. So there will be no overcrowding at all. So we have put in place these measures to ensure that overcrowding does not occur. Aside that, we have also upped the security at all these centers to ensure that non-applicants are not allowed in to increase the numbers at the centers. So that is what we have done so far.
Well, you've also said that friends and family or non-applicants can come. How are you going to ensure that they adhere to that, you know, measure?
I think it is in the interest of the families and friends and all of us to ensure that the applicants go through this process peacefully and safely. And so what we have done is that we have built up, the military police will be there, more personnel have been brought on board, and will not allow anybody. Mm. We would want to appeal to the the general public to help us do this process as seamless as possible. We need their children and their friends to be safe, and so we'd rather appeal to them not to come. We wouldn't want to be seen using force or trying to arrest anybody, because the military police will be there in their numbers, other personnel will be there in their numbers, and we will not allow anybody, and we mean nobody, will be allowed in. And so the general public is accordingly advised to stay at home and allow the process to go on as planned. But the applicant must also learn to comport themselves. When we ask them to sit, we expect them to sit. Until you are called, you are expected to sit wherever has been dedicated to you. And so we appeal to the applicants to obey simple instructions. Mm. In fact, the press release has stressed it. We expect them to obey strictly the instructions that will be given out. Anybody who misconducts him or herself will be thrown out, and that is automatic disqualification. So whilst we will do our bit to ensure that we handle them humanely, we expect nothing from them than strict adherence to the instructions that will be given out to them when they come.
Well, she also clarified that these protocols will apply in some regions.
Let me say that the process we used has served us over the years without any problem. And so, unfortunately, if this happened, it means that it is time for us to review the way we do things. And even before the Board of Inquiry comes up, we have taken that steps. Aside Accra, we have also taken steps to expand the venues for the enlistment. So we have now added the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology Stadium in addition to the Baba Yara Stadium to make sure that there is more space for the applicant to do their work. Let me also stress that we applied or we advertised because we need this applicant. And so we do everything within our power to make sure that going forward, the processes run smoothly without any challenges.
Well, last week, following the stampede that claimed six lives, government announced a plan to offer automatic recruitment slots to families of the deceased as compensation. Well, security analyst Professor Kwesi Yeni disagrees.
So next time I'm going to take an exam and I slip and fall, then I should be passed? I mean, what kind of country is this? Okay, the fact that an institution failed in establishing appropriate mechanisms and processes that are protective of the applicant doesn't mean that those who failed or those who got hurt in the process must automatically be recruited. Look, we've got to disentangle our emotions from decisions that must be rational, logically based.
Well, let me bring in now the minority spokesperson on defense and interior. Joins us on the line right now, Reverend Tim Fojo. Reverend, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. Quickly, what do you make of the new measures that the armed forces just announced? They're going to have a total of 8 sub-centers. 600 people will be allowed in batches into these centers. They'll receive SMS alerts. There are going to be additional military police and other security agencies there to ensure there's law and order. You've asked for a revision of these recruitment measures at these centers. Are these enough for you?
Yeah, so, Evans, right from the beginning, these were the measures we called for, the reforms that we called for. We are yet to have the minister, the acting minister for defense, and the team honoring our invitation at parliament for us to probe the. But ahead of it, the initial reforms that we proposed were that the need to ensure that additional or further decentralization is done. We need to create 4 additional centers in Greater Accra and minimum 2 additional centers in Ashanti region. And so we follow up to that. We've seen they've responded to put in place some measures in line with that. And in some centers, in some locations, they even have 2 separate centers. We are going to follow up to ensure that the communication to the prospective or potential recruits actually reflects the segregated scheduling. And this position exonerates our point from the beginning that it was disingenuous on the part of the Ghana Armed Forces and even the president to have blamed the stampede on potential recruits breaching protocol. We thought that that was most unfortunate for failure to put in place the right measures and the right controls, sending bulk messages for over 21,000 people to converge at the center, failure to deploy adequate numbers of military police, deploying only 2 military police. All this culminated into the unfortunate incident we saw. So it was most unfortunate and disingenuous for them to suggest that the stampede should be blamed on potential recruits. They should accept failure. They should accept responsibility. So these initial measures are optimal. We are going to follow up to ensure that they actually implemented the right way. We also understand a board of inquiry is underway. But when the minister and his team honors our invitation and we exercise our oversight, there are a lot of interrogations to be done for us to probe and ensure that comprehensive reforms beyond the stopgap measures being put in place to complete the recruitment exercise for this batch is done and going forward, sustainable and very creditable measures permanently are discussed and put in place.
You say this is a failure of the Ghana Armed Forces and its measures. If that is the case, then do you expect consequences for those who you blame for supervising the stampede that led to six deaths?
No, the consequences starts from the commander-in-chief of the Ghana Armed Forces. I mean, everything rises and falls on leadership. For a very long time now, we called for the appointment of a substantive defense minister. They were adamant. Recall in Minister of Interior, he has just recently met his team, the IGP, the Controller General of Immigration, the Chief Fire Officer, the Director General of Prisons, reviewed all the recruitment processes and made inputs. He gave that broad guidelines, solid leadership, before engaging the public. So if we had a substantive defense minister, a similar oversight would have been done. And these deaths, rather unfortunate, could have been prevented.
No, but how so? I mean, the acting defense minister has all the powers of a substantive defense minister until the substantive one is appointed. What difference would that have made?
This incident happened on a day before the budget presentation.
But the plan for the recruitment would have been laid out. I mean, the plan for the recruitment would have been laid out weeks ahead of the
Evans,
before the budget.
Evans, you know the processes leading up to a budget starts getting busy a month even before the day. And so we all must admit that for a finance ministry to be combined with a defense ministry to be given to one person, you won't get the best out of the person. Particularly, one will suffer. Defense will suffer. If you had combined Interior Ministry with Defense Ministry and appointed a minister as acting for the other, they are similar. And their modus operandi are quite similar. They compare notes on a daily basis. That would not be problematic at all. But finance and defense, completely unrelated. So there's deep leadership crisis. If we don't fix that, there will be another dangerous event which will bring us all back trying to halt processes, trying to reform. I mean, we need to be proactive. So that was one. The second thing we started pointing out was the reshuffles and the changes they made at various levels in the Ghana Armed Forces, you know, deprived the Ghana Armed Forces from benefiting from institutional memory. So fresh directors heading directorates here and there, and so they failed to benefit from institutional memory. And all these things that were easily preventable. Having the back end, the benefit of seeing the back end, 21,000 applying to greater credit loan, should occasion rescheduling and should occasion before communication was made. These government measures, we would have to.
Reverend Ntim Fojo, apologies there with that connection to you. Reverend Ntim Fojo is a ranking member of the Defense and Interior Committee and is lying unable to hold. But he's made that point very clearly that this is part of a leadership failure that goes all the way to the top as far as the Commander-in-Chief is concerned. But they acknowledge the revised protocols for the recruitment that will now start on Thursday at 8 centres, and only 600 people will get in at a go, and they'll be sending out messages to those who will be assigned to each of the 8 centres to pay attention to that. You can go onto myjournal.com for the details of this if you are one of those who is expecting to be recruited into the military or the Ghana Armed Forces more broadly, and you have an application pending, check out the specifics on myjoyonline.com. This is Newsnight on Joy 99.7 FM. Let's stay with the issue about defense and security, because the government has today announced plans to introduce a fresh bill to Parliament for the establishment of a security university. The piece of legislation called the National Defence University Bill seeks to streamline and enhance the training of security personnel across the country. Minister for Education Harun Idrisu made the announcement at the launch of the Speaker of Parliament Aban Babing Scholarship Scheme for MPs.
The Speaker, is not just you. I'm sure sooner than later I'll come to Parliament to introduce the National Defence University. Is President Mahama's decision that the Ghana Armed Forces and all its allied institutions be upgraded into a university of the National Defense University, NDU, will come to Parliament to introduce a bill on that. So to Professor Atuahene, I should commend Speaker Bagbin, and I believe that many of our academic institutions in Ghana are listening. You can establish a chair in governance. Then once in a while, you can invite the like of Mr. Speaker, former speakers, former experienced members of Parliament to share their views on governance and the administration of the country generally, to understand what Parliament does and what Parliament would not do. So, Mr. Speaker, I should commend you highly for this initiative.
I have an address today is the Education Minister. So live here on Newsnight on Joy 99.7 FM, right after business. We take you to a way out where residents are pushing for swift ratification of the lithium deal. We'll also hear from policy analyst and the Chamber of Mines. They're both asking the minority and the majority size in Parliament to desist from politicizing the lithium lease and pass it.
Playing endless politics with this lithium deal is sending a bad signal to the international investor communities.
George is here with the latest from the world of business. Hello, George.
Evans, and coming up in business, Finance Minister Dr. Atuforson projects about 6.5% inflation rate before the end of this year. Accounting firm KPMG pushes for more economic buffers as Ghana gets ready to exit the IMF program next year. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, your number one stop shop for all your office essentials, Synthes tanks, and Pepsodent, herbal, and charcoal. You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, Finance Minister Dr. Atuforson is expecting inflation to drop further to about 6.5% before the end of this year. Inflation rate for the month of October dropped marginally to 8% for the 10th consecutive time and the lowest in 4 years. However, there are fears that the good run may be coming to an end as we end the harvest season soon, but the minister disagrees.
Even the 11% at the time, a lot of people doubted me, but I was very sure of what we were doing and we knew it was going to happen. So inflation is down, currency is strong and stable, you have growth rebounding strongly, and fiscal discipline is on, the fiscal balance is doing, revenue doing, expenditure down. And so with all the kind of things we've done to restore stability and business confidence, you need to certainly sustain it. Otherwise, you don't even start it. The central bank has been able to build reserves thanks to the effort of the governor. He works so well. And all what we are putting together, what I'm trying to say is that all the gains you have made, there is the need for you to consolidate it. Because if you don't consolidate it, again, Ghanaians will say, oh, you know, and that is what everybody is saying. They keep saying that, oh, can they sustain it going forward? And so to be able to signal to the people of Ghana that this is a new era, we need to consolidate the stability that we are seeing and to send signals also to the investor community that once again, Ghana is ripe for business. Because it's only until...
And that is the Finance Minister, Dr. Atuforson. In a related development, economist Professor Peter Korte wants government to do more in the area of food production and post-harvest storage facilities to sustain the current inflation levels.
The single-digit inflation is sustainable once we continue to pursue the current fiscal consolidation regime, once we continue to maintain confidence, once the exchange rate remains fairly stable and the cedi becomes the currency of choice, I think we can sustain the single-digit inflation. And of course, what is also very critical is the need to ramp up food production, the need to increase food. Food accounts for a greater component of our expenditure basket, and therefore, if we really want to fight inflation, let's look at food as well as non-food items as well. But I think food is very critical. They need to invest more as we move along. They need to invest more in irrigation. They need to support commercial food production.
And that is economist Professor Peter
Kotte, auditing and servicing firm KPMG's advice on government to consider building more economic buffers as the country prepares to exit the IMF program that is next year. The firm argues that it is crucial that the country will be required to make some commitment towards domestic financing. Country manager and partner at KPMG Ghana, Andy Akoto, gave their advice in reaction to the 2026 budget statement during a post-budget forum in Accra today.
Even as the government moves to stimulate growth, it's very important that it also build buffers towards the subsequent exit from the IMF program, because it will come with a number of outcomes, including, of course, beginning to service our debt obligations and so on. So overall, we are expectant and we are hoping that government will put in place the necessary safety measures to ensure that the laudable initiatives are achieved.
Andy Akoto is the country managing partner at accounting firm KPMG Ghana. Now, chief executive of Star Oil, Philip Tiaku, has questioned the relevance of the current price floor program for petroleum products. The National Petroleum Authority last year rolled out the program, which prevents product price being sold a certain level. Mr. Tiaku noted that this, he could have, I mean, the firm could have actually sold below the current levels if it hadn't been this program.
If the regulator, the MPA's view is that the price floor is necessary to protect the companies from outdoing themselves in terms of a price war, there are various ways the regulator can check that. The regulator has access to all the prices at which we buy from the suppliers. They have the tax rates, and they can tell whether we are making a profit or not making a profit on every single transaction that we enter on their portal. So there are ways the regulator can actually gauge profitability in the market. Price floor, I think, denies the consumer of market opportunities. For example, we've had a period when the CD suddenly dropped from 12 point something to about 10.5. Mm. Because of a price floor, I can't sell my fuel below 12.
Philip Tiaku is the chief executive of Star Oil. And that's all for business on Newsnight. Back to you, Evans.
George, thank you very much. We can do sports now, and Mr. Cranton is here with the latest.
Yeah, the Black Stars of Ghana, they held their final training session in Seoul ahead of tomorrow's game against South Korea. Three players, the Black Stars are going into the game with three players less, with Antoine Semenyo and Mohamed Salisu leaving camp with various injuries, in addition to Abu Francis, who suffered a double leg fracture in the defeat to Japan. Head coach of the side, Otuadu, says his team are prepared and know exactly what to expect against the Koreans tomorrow.
Like we said, we had a difficult match against Japan. Think and hope that we learned a lot of it. We knew that they were going to press us, and we expect the same for Korea to do that. We know exactly what Korea can do, especially in the transition moments. So we have to learn out of the mistakes like we did in the last game. So it's very, very important for us to be comfortable, to stay compact, also have a good rest defense even when we build up, so that in case when we lose balls, we are not open to concede a goal.
That was Black Stars head coach Otuadu speaking there. Now, Ghana's ambassador to Korea, Kojo Choi, paid the team a visit earlier today and shared some words of encouragement.
And Korea has so much respect for all of you, because when they talk about the football power of Africa, Ghana always comes on top. And you are here representing Ghana. So the question that I'm going to ask you is, do you think you are small? I said, no, you guys are big, and you are already big enough. I understand that we faced a very nice defeat in Japan. I understand coach is trying a lot of experiments here and there. And I also understand that some of our, so you know, the big boys are not here. I believe this gives us a better opportunity.
You heard Ghana's ambassador to Korea, Kojo Choi, bringing an end to sports.
And when can we expect the draw, the World Cup draw?
December 5th.
Okay, I'm pretty sure we're all hoping that we get, you know, a group that we can sail through quite easily.
Yeah, it depends on the rankings. That's why tomorrow's game is very important. A win for Ghana could slightly boost their rankings, which could put us in maybe pot 3 instead of pot 4.
Okay.
And that could help us.
Okay, that game is important then. Thank you very much, Daniel Kranting. And still live here on Newsnight, it's on Joy 99.7 FM. I'll be sharing your thoughts with the rest of the world pretty shortly here on Newsnight. Now, civil society and the Chamber of Mines have tonight joined forces to sound the alarm on the growing politicization of Ghana's lithium agreement, cautioning that increasingly heated exchanges between the majority and minority in parliament could undermine investor confidence and jeopardize the country's economic future. As tensions rise, residents of Ewoya in the central region are demanding swift ratification of the revised agreement, which was laid before parliament last week. Traditional leaders have warned that Parliament will face consequences if the deal isn't passed by the end of the year. In the latest episode of our Hope on Pause, the Lithium Promise series, Emmanuel Jivenu examines the link between a vibrant lithium project and jobs in the communities impacted by the project.
Hello, Bami.
Justice Agri is one of more than 100 workers laid off, casualties of Parliament's delay in ratifying the Ewoya lithium project. Before he was sent home, Justice had risen from roadside weeding to become a semi-skilled technician, a job that gave him pride, stability, and a new sense of who he was becoming. It was the first time Justice earned enough to dream. His pay rose, and with it, the hope of a better life for his family.
When we first discovered the lithium, I was thrilled. Everyone was excited because it meant new job opportunities and development for the central region.
But 2 years without parliamentary approval brought all the progress to a standstill.
I've gone back to Sweden. That's how I provide for my family. Our situation has worsened since the lithium project stalled, and we hope it will be revived.
I'm sorry, I agree, Mr. Justice. Agri
is my father. He told us that they said they should come home, they will go again. They will start the work around somewhere 2025, but still, the work is not ready. So they are still at home.
Every day, Justice stays home, waiting for a call that never comes, is another day her daughter's hope for college drifts further away.
I completed school around 2023. Then because of money, financial issues, I couldn't further my education. But he's willing to take me to school when the work comes in.
Community leaders say the delay are deepening frustration and hardship.
I cannot even describe the extent of my disappointment. It is very sad. Such opportunity. One day you are asked to go home because the ratification is not given.
In Krampa Krom, a trained technician of 8 years is back to the charcoal business he thought he had left behind.
What am I going to do? I have a wife and children to care for. Before coming here, I was making charcoal. That's how I earn money to buy books for my children.
The lithium project was really helpful at the start. It brought much needed support to the people of Mfansima, especially me. My whole family was excited because I could provide for them.
Not everyone has been sent home yet, but for the few still working, survival hangs by a thread.
Yes, sir. And my besides me, sir, will be here. It may be I'm about to run.
I'm from John Ampa. Me, more Atlantic Lithium. Me, I'm monitoring.
I currently handle monitoring on the mining concession. Because of the delay in ratifying the Ewoya lithium project, work has slowed and many of my colleagues have been laid off. By God's grace, I'm still working, but most of my friends are at home. We are really urging the government to fast-track the ratification of the Ewoya lithium project so that we, the youth in this area, can have jobs.
Yes. from 167 workers down to 62, more than 100 jobs gone. Atlantic Lithium employed geologists, lab technicians, drivers, electricians, and other support staff. Lands and Natural Resources Minister Emmanuel Amakofibua has now laid a revised agreement before Parliament.
Three key areas has been looked at: the royalty rate adjustment, VAT deferral on capital inputs, and SORPON transshipment facility feasibility. These three areas were new areas that has been factored, and that called for us to look at the new lease. The new lease has been negotiated, sent to Cabinet for approval, and we are here in Parliament to get ratification.
We will not forgive them if they defer it again. With the processes it has passed, there shouldn't be any hullabaloo about it.
The Ewoyiya Lithium Project promised 800 direct jobs, at least 2,700 indirect jobs, and a new industrial path. Now, that future waits on parliamentary approval.
Here you to the strana, Oya Abonku, Ewoya, Anuchi, Nkunkuwa, Ototrohoma.
We, the youth and the communities affected by the project, are pleading with the government to have mercy on us. We need their support and grace to ratify the project, or else we will continue to suffer.
2 years have passed. The machines are quiet. The jobs are gone. And hope sits in limbo. For families like the Agris, ratification of the Ewoyiya Lithium Project must not be politicized. It is their chance to live their dreams again. Ewoyiya's future, and the futures tied to it, now wait on a single choice. A choice that can restore dignity or confirm another broken promise. Emmanuel Jiveno, Joy News, Ewoyiya, Central Region.
Well, co-chair of the Ghana Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative, Dr. Steve Matea, wants Parliament to focus on the national interest, depoliticize the debate, and think about the big picture.
Clearly, the MPP is playing politics with this whole issue. And it's also fair to observe that the NDC in their time also played politics with the issue. The whole discussion seems to be driven by sentiments rather than data and science. Let me put on record that Zimbabwe is Africa's leading producer of lithium. And yet, all Zimbabwe gets in a year from its lithium is 400 million maximum. Sometimes last year they got about $350 million. Your gold, the gold we produce in this country, gives us an excess of $2 billion. With the rising gold prices, I won't be surprised it will end over and above $3 billion in a year. And yet we are happy to take 5% royalty for gold, which is more valuable than lithium, and condemn 10% royalty for lithium, which is worthless. So it looks like we are driven by sentiments. Everybody has pinned their hopes on lithium, but we are not going to get anything near what we get for gold.
So this is even dead on arrival.
Exactly. I think we are just being overly sentimental. And it is also because over the years we've not been able to unleash the development potential of our natural resources. And so many people tend to see this as a last option, the last opportunity we have. But the value of the resource we are talking about is not the kind of mineral or the kind of value that would transform this economy.
The Chief Executive Officer of the Chamber of Mines, Dr. Kenneth Ashigbe, asks Parliament to ratify the deal as soon as possible.
It is important we get this thing to start and then ensure that the price of lithium that had even tanked, we make sure that we revise the terms in such a way that it makes it viable as a business, so that everybody, including those who have given their land, including government, including those who are waiting for jobs, including other contractors, and the local content arm of it, who are also waiting to be able to start work, are able to do that, so that as a country, we'll be able to benefit out of this. Bear in mind that this is lithium that, there will be some concentration that is going to be done, all of which then adds value, all of which then retains a bit of value into this country. So we should work as quickly as we can to get this lease signed.
And that there is Dr. Ken Ashigbe speaking to us today on The Pulse. A few of your messages on our WhatsApp console and the stories that we've done so far here on the program. And this one from the Nekwama Boateng in the Blue Kuma says, the Speaker of Parliament, he says, talks too much. Alexander Afenyamarkin is, what Afenyamarkin is doing in Parliament is exactly what the Speaker did a few years ago. And it is now playing out right in his face. He had ever dreamt of becoming Speaker, he would have conducted himself, he says, better. And also from Godswill Akakbo says, it's high time we review our recruitment processes as a nation in light of the current developments and the technology that currently avails. I want to applaud the Ghana Armed Forces for taking drastic measures to address some of the inefficiencies in the recruitment process. I believe candidates will follow instructions to avoid creating a pandemonium at the centres. And I want to quickly bring you the latest development as far as the Chief Justice is concerned. He was sworn in today, Justice Bafoboni, and we've heard from him. He says he's backing calls for reforms as far as legal education is concerned.
In legal education, the future of the bar is the future of the bench. You must move from exclusion to inclusion, from rote learning to critical thinking, and from credentialism to competence. Working with the General Legal Counsel, the Ghana School of Law, and our law faculties, we shall pursue a model that ensures opportunity without compromising quality.
And that there is the newly sworn in Chief Justice, Justice Paul Bafoboni. And that's it for News 9 tonight. Enjoy the rest of your evening.